Blog Talk Radio.
Political corruption focused on the United States. Excuse me. But there's corruption in Canada, our neighbor to the north. And of course, they have a similar problem in what is known as the Chicago of Canada, Montreal, in Quebec, where I believe two of their mayors or mayoral candidates were under investigation. The mayor of Toronto, Canada's second largest city in Ontario, in the English province. They have a, seems like a Marion Barry problem where either their mayor or his associates were involved, caught on video, doing drugs. So corruption knows no borders. Now, the bicycle agenda. We're hearing a lot about this. The big scandal here in San Francisco, Northern California, is that this so-called Metropolitan Transportation Authority wants to spend $600 million of taxpayer money for bicycle lanes and all of these devices, bicycle parking, not meters, which they deserve to have and should have, but racks, bicycle racks, and free bikes, all the, you know, the big ish, the big, what should we call it, the big giveaway to people who don't pay taxes, who don't have liability insurance unless they have apartment insurance and they're covered on their bicycles. Who don't have license plates on their bicycle, who don't have safety devices, and who don't wear helmets, and who do not obey the rules of the road, and there are specific rules of the road. So the politicians are being bullied, and some say buggered, by these bicycle propagandists who want something, want it all and then some. And some people around the country are saying no. For instance, in New York, because of Mayor Bloomberg, also known as the Mayor for Life, wanted during his administration to extend a lot of bike lanes and the rest of that agenda throughout New York City. Well, what's happened is that these bicycle racks are placed on streets where garbage cans were placed by the inhabitants of New York to get their garbage picked up. Anybody who was living in the 60s, remember there was a New York garbage strike. Luckily, that strike occurred in the winter, because otherwise the city would have smelled worse than the Hudson River. I vaguely remember hearing about that when, of course, we lived back east, and in Chicago and places like that, there weren't garbage strikes. The mayor would not permit that. although this is interesting, as an aside, people who caused trouble for the Democratic administration, Cook County and in Chicago in particular, to really keep them in line, or to show them who's boss, their garbage was not picked up. The city picked up the garbage, unlike San Francisco, where there is a contract with alleged people who were supposed to have underworld contacts. Let's put it that way. We're not talking about garbage that ends up in the landfill. But what's happening is the New Yorkers who find that they can't put their garbage cans on the street to be picked up are starting to trash bicycles and racks, and it's going to get worse because these people, you know, they think of their little interests. They don't think that, hey, this really doesn't work. America is not a coolie economy. We're not China before they discovered Mercedes, BMWs, and Saabs, Porsches, and Audis, and all the rest. And Cadillacs, too. I understand they like Cadillacs. So what we need to do is work out something for bicycles to have safe lanes where they can ride their bikes, and they're not going to interfere with the commerce and the flow of traffic, because it doesn't work. And these bicycles, you don't have your bicycles delivering pizza or takeout or ambulance services or picking up your kids, if you have babies, picking up their diapers. So you have to be realistic about this. Now, the city of Davis, which is a university town near Sacramento in Northern California, they have worked out a system where the bicycles are accommodated, but they also enforce the rules of the road for bicycles. So we'll be bringing up what Davis has done to make bicycling safe and also to make it practical for the inhabitants of an urban city, even though Davis is a small city and it is a university town. But this whole business in places like San Francisco and other cities, Houston, I understand there are problems down there. And also in San Francisco, bicyclists are not ticketed. They run down and even kill people. We've had two deaths. I personally was injured, knocked down on the street. My wife was knocked down. It cost us $2,000 plus in medical bills and ambulances. So there's no accountability by these bicyclists, and all they can think of is their little interests. Two-wheeled kamikazes, somebody called them. They're a real hazard. And, of course, a lot of these people are from – they're carpetbaggers from other parts of the United States and Canada. Also, they don't have – their leaders do not have a background in urban transportation. One leader of this organization has a background in women's studies. I don't know what the heck that has to do with bicycles and safety of everybody who has to use the streets. So yeah, we had a Tom Dewey interview here. Oh, here it is. It's very interesting because Tom Dewey was known as the racket-busting district attorney of New York, and he made his reputation going after, I think, Murder Incorporated and winning the convictions. Well, he ran for governor of New York, and then in 1944 he was the Republican candidate for president. And he was up against FDR, and he lost that. In 1948, the Republicans decided to run him again. And one of the issues about Dewey was, how did he avoid the draft, the military draft, and the impact on this amicus veritas, the new shadow? You will see the button that came out on Dewey and his avoidance of the military draft. Now, also, at that time, during World War II, Leonard Bernstein was a very athletic young man, about 22, graduated from Harvard, why he wasn't drafted. How did he escape the draft, or how was where did he get an exemption? Now, he had a wealthy father, but what's interesting is the great German conductor Bruno Walter was indisposed on a Sunday afternoon for New York Philharmonic broadcast, and Leonard Bernstein, at 22, a wunderkind, as they say, substituted for him, and it was a great success for Leonard Bernstein. But then a couple of people asked, well, shouldn't he have been drafted in the U.S. Army and worked in with the orchestras and bands? Now, an Austrian refugee from Hitler's Austria, Erich Leinsdorf, he came to America, and he got here through the intervention, or was able to stay here through the intervention of Lyndon Baines Johnson. Now, Erich Leinsdorf was a conductor of the Cleveland Orchestra, but he was drafted. So this is very strange. But anyway, this is that Dewey speaking. He had a great voice, and I think it was Teddy Roosevelt's daughter, Mrs. Longworth, who described him as a little man with a mustache on the wedding cake. But here he is talking about what he's going to do. He assumed that he was going to be elected president, and the fact that the Chicago Tribune had him defeating Harry Truman in 1948. There's a classic headline. Well, here he is. Here is Tom Dewey, and this is a little piece of audio history from the Carson Brazola and Western Public Archives.
Tonight of America's most surprising election.
I had on the National Broadcasting Company, and Miss Catherine Byrne was saying, while the president is a million votes ahead in the popular vote, we have yet to hear from the and we are very sure that when the country vote comes in, Mr. Truman will be defeated by an overwhelming majority. And I went back to bed and went to sleep.
Now, mistakenly, that was Harry Truman who had won that night, but he was holding up that copy of the Chicago Tribune, Republican paper of Colonel Robert McCormick, and it had Dewey defeated Truman, which was not true. And, of course, Harry Truman had great fun with this. And, of course, he served the one term and decided he had enough. He had the Korean War. He had the major strike. He had to deal with the Taft-Hartley Law, which he had been supported by unions all his life. And he felt that he could not, he had to veto that. I had this here. For some reason, I can't find it on Dewey. Well, it's really weird here. Oh, here we go. Here is Tom Dewey.
Tonight, we enter upon a campaign to unite all America. On January 20, we will enter on a new era. Next January 20, there will begin in Washington the biggest unraveling, unsnarling, untangling operation in our nation's history.
Well, that was a short little statement from Dewey. Now, those of you who are familiar with the poster of Uncle Sam pointing his finger, the origin of that poster came out of World War One, with the British, who were very good at propaganda. They're really better than Americans, I think, sometimes. Anyway, the original poster, which is on this blog talk, is that of Lord Horatio Kitchener. Kitchener was the great British field marshal who fought in the Boer War. He was the commander. He was the minister for war in the Lloyd George cabinet during World War One, and he had been present at the Battle of Jutland when the British fleet met the German fleet. It's the only major naval surface battle in World War One, and it came out as a draw, although the British think they won. Later, Lord Kitchener, to keep Russia and the Tsar in the war, was on board a British cruiser called the Hampshire, and it was either struck a mine or torpedoed, and Lord Kitchener was drowned. Kitchener was accused of being gay, and there's a lot of controversy about that. But anyway, he was quite a military person, and of course he's probably best known for that poster, Britain Needs You, and you can of course see it on this blog talk. Now, among the policy questions, we keep hearing about dogs injuring babies and children. In fact, it was a New York Times article. I should read part of it, where this woman had adopted this dog from the Virgin Islands. The dog had been abused, apparently, and later, when she left the dog alone with her child, a young boy, the dog bit the kid's skull and did some damage. And she could never understand, and the kid could never understand why the dog didn't like him. But this happens all the time. We just had the case in Northern California where a pit bull was given to this family, and of course they let, and the kid was a heavyset kid, and apparently he sat on the back of this pit bull, and you know, no dogs or cats is going to put up with that. And so what happened was the pit bull tore at the kid's skull and killed him. The person who gave the dog to the family happened to be a Union City policeman. And of course the question is, public policy question is, when a guardian or parents or a parent doesn't monitor a child and a dog and leaves them alone, or even a cat, cats will scratch and they can even bite. But leaving a child alone with an animal is not, it should, if their animal reacts and injures the child, should the parents be, or the guardian be charged with parental or guardian neglect? This is the question. Of course, in the case of this poor pit bull, the next day, after the child's death, the dog was taken to the local municipal pound and put down, euthanized. So the dog paid the price. It may have been a nice dog, and not all pit bulls are rabid, aggressive animals. You'll find that with any breed. And of course, no self-respecting dog or cat's going to put up with tugging at, pulling the ears, pulling the tail, slapping the dog, jumping on its back, kicking it, or doing other things, or pulling its hair, or sticking the fingers in a dog's mouth. So, you know, you've got to respect animals, and if you can't respect animals, or if you don't want to monitor your child and leave it alone with a dog or a cat, then you shouldn't have these animals, and if something happens, you should be held responsible. Now, there are other, we've had another case here in San Francisco where this guy had a young baby and he had a boa constrictor. Well, everybody was a little concerned about this boa constrictor wrapping itself around the baby's crib. Well, they didn't. That didn't happen. What did happen was the owner of the boa constrictor, a black guy named Othello, that was the name he used, got a mouse to feed to the boa. Well, the mouse didn't want to be dinner or lunch or appetizer to the boa, so it bit the boa, and the boa caught pneumonia and died. So it's like the mongoose and the cobra. So these things happen. But again, you have to, not everybody should have an animal also, or a dog. This is a growing, during the 70s and the 80s, the pet food industry propagandists and advertising people put out this thing, pets are wonderful. Well, pets are wonderful for some people and for people who are responsible, but pets are not wonderful for people who neglect those animals and lead and create situations or tolerate situations where the animal is left alone with a child, which might abuse the animal. So that's something we need to be aware of, because police and fire and emergency services are required in these situations to respond to the injured child, and even animal control has to pick up the animal. Who pays for that? The American taxpayer. So this is something we should be aware of. Now, the other question, for all these people who are concerned about the bicycles and the bicycle propaganda and the politician's agenda, ask yourself this. Do these bicycles, should they be allowed to share the road on heavy commercial traveled roads and streets? The other question is, do bicycles contribute to the economy? Besides, you know, once a bicycle is bought, and some of these bicycles cost thousands of dollars. Once a bicycle is bought, purchased, and parts are purchased for tires, and you're supposed to have a helmet and safety devices, okay, that contributes. But so far as I said, is it going to deliver your pizza? Is it going to deliver your Chinese takeout? Is it going to deliver your diapers? Or certainly can't be used for emergency services. So these are questions that need to be asked, that bicycles have a very limited use in our society. America runs on four wheels, not two. Interestingly, the Germans invented the bicycle, but the bicycle is really not that big a large part of the German economy. Of course, the Germans gave us these great cars, the Mercedes, the BMW, the Porsches, and of course the Volkswagen, the Audi, excuse me. So we see where their interest is. So we're going to play our theme. I misplaced the deaths and births today because I had an emergency. So we're going to end with our usual politics and poker. We will be back Wednesday, and hopefully pretty soon we're going to have that interview with Patrick Butler, who just did a book on one of the Chicago neighborhoods, which has a lot of history that's applicable to American history. So we're going to end with politics and poker right now. Oh, maybe I should play. This is something I like to play from time to time. Where the heck is this? We missed our Flag Day, I think this is important. Warren Harding was another one who had a deep voice, and here he is talking about our military veterans.
As there is on me the realization of the unusual character of this occasion, our Republic has been at war before. It has asked and received the supreme sacrifices of its sons and daughters, and faith in America has been justified. Many sons and daughters made the sublime effort and went to hallowed graves as the nation's defenders. But we never before consummated the battle under the flag in a foreign land. Never before was there the impressive spectacle of thousands of dead returning to find eternal resting place in the beloved homeland. The incident is without parallel in the history that I know. These dead know nothing of our ceremonies today. They sense nothing of the sentiment or the tenderness which brings their wasted bodies to the homeland for burial, close to kin and friends and cherished associations. These poor bodies are but the clay tenements once possessed of souls which flamed in patriotic devotion, lighted new hopes on the battlegrounds of civilization. In their sacrifice, led on to accuse autocracy before the court of eternal justice. We are not met for them, nor we love and honor and speak a grateful tribute. It would be futile to speak to those who do not hear, or to sorrow for those who cannot sense it, or to rejoice those who cannot know. But we can speak for country, we can reach those who sorrowed and sacrificed through their service, who suffered through their going, who glory with the Republic through their heroic achievement, who rejoice in the civilization their heroism preserves. Every funeral, every memorial, every tribute is for the living, an offering in compensation of sorrow. When the light of life goes out, there's a new radiance in eternity. Somehow the glow of it relieves the darkness which is left behind. Never a death, but somewhere a new life. Never a sacrifice, but somewhere an atonement. Never a service, but somewhere, somehow an achievement. These have served, which is the supreme inspiration in living. They have earned everlasting gratitude, which is the supreme solace in dying. No one may measure the vast and varied affections and sorrows centering on this priceless cargo of bodies, once living, fighting for and finally dying for the Republic. One's words fail, his understanding is halted, his emotions are surged beyond control when contemplating these thousands of beloved dead. I find 100,000 sorrows touching my heart. There's ringing in my ears like an admonition eternal, an insistent call. It must not be again. It must not be again. God grant that it will not be. And let a practical people join in cooperation with God to the end that it shall not be. I would not wish a nation for which men are not willing to fight and if need be to die. But I do wish for a nation where it's not necessary to just sacrifice. I do not pretend that millennial days have come. But I can believe in the possibility of a nation being so righteous as never to make a war of conquest. And a nation so powerful in righteousness that none will dare invoke her wrath. I wish for us such an America. These heroes were sacrificed in the supreme conflict of all human history. They saw democracy challenged and defended it. They saw civilization threatened and rescued it. They saw America affronted and resented it. They saw our nation's rights imperiled. Stamp those rights with a new sanctity and renewed security. We shall not forget, no matter whether they lie amid the sweetness and the bloom of the homeland, or sleep in the soil they crimson, our mindfulness, our gratitude, our reverence shall be in the preserved republic, the maintained liberties, and the supreme justice for which they died.
That was the very late Warren G. Harding, president. He was the first president to use the radio very effectively, and of course he had a deep voice. He also played the tuba. A lot of people don't know that. Well, we'll end with our usual politics and poker. We will be back Wednesday, and also go to our Amicus Veritas YouTube site, AmicusVeritas, and unfortunately I misspelled it on here. Also, there will be an update on the Sean City case. Father is a prominent dentist here in San Francisco. There was a public gathering yesterday to focus on the fact that this kid had brain damage, and he is medically at risk. And he disappeared over a month ago here in San Francisco, as some other kids have disappeared. And he was last seen, his cell phone went out by Golden Gate Park, and was last seen getting into a car. We don't know who was driving that car. And, of course, this is, regret to say, this is the modus operandi of people who are sexual predators. So we hope that didn't happen, but you have to be realistic because these people are out there and they do these things. So we will and with our politics and poker right now. We'll be back Wednesday.
What do you say, Ben? Want a hand?
No, you guys go ahead. I got too much on my mind to play poker.
King bet.
Toss your five. Tony, up to you.
Hey, Tony, what are you
going to
do?
I'm in.
So am I.
Gentlemen, here we are, and one thing is clear. We gotta pick a candidate for Congress this year. Big ace.
Ace bet.
You'll pay through the nose.
Okay, where do you stand?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Info.
Possible straight, possible flush.
Gentlemen, how about some names we can use? Some qualified Republican who's willing to lose.
How's it about we should make Jack Riley the guy?
Which Riley are you thinking of, Jack B or Jack Y?
I say neither one. I never even met him.
I say when you got a pair of Jack, better.
I'll be
us, politics or poker, which is more important?
Paraphrase.
Bet 'em.
Yeah, that's what a lot of betting is going on in Washington and elsewhere. So we'll be back Wednesday at 4 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Peter Paul Brazola, and we will have some other interesting things. Hopefully I'll find my births, deaths, and events relevant to us. Good night.